Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. We're broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm Guy Schaefer.
And I'm Megan Marone. Today we will hear from labor activist and WOOC correspondent Willie Terry about the importance of Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy and the relationship between labor activism and civil rights.
Then we'll hear from WOOC correspondent H. Bosch Jr. with his segment Education, Empowerment, and Entrepreneurship. He sat down with speaker, publisher, and author Sherry Quinn.
Afterwards, we'll be joined by local poet and educator Avery Stemple, a psycho-spiritual philosopher-poet.
And then we will be joined by our WOOC youth interns Lauren Wilson and Trayvon Votran. Lauren will discuss her relationship with reading the autobiography Asada by Asada Shakur and her ideas on the importance of art, truthfulness, and compassion.
And Trayvon will give us an update on his newspaper, TV News, and provide a local community calendar. But first, here are some headlines.
State Senate Independent Democratic Conference leader Jeff Klein held a hastily called news conference on Wednesday and denied a former female staffer's allegation that he forcibly kissed her outside a Lark Street bar in 2015. The news conference took place just before the Huffington Post published a story detailing the accusations by the 30-year-old former staff person, who quit her job shortly after the alleged harassment. Klein has been instrumental in propping up the Republican control of the state Senate. While Governor Cuomo has called for an investigation, he is facing pressure to take a much stronger stance on the issue of sexual harassment, which has long been a major problem at the state capitol.
It is reported that Saratoga County has the largest gender pay gap in the state. Women working in the county make an average of $18,539 less than male counterparts, nearly twice the state's average pay gap of $9,558. Albany's gap is $7,459. Rensselaer's comes in at $8,983, with Schenectady's tilting higher as a gap of $9,056. Women in Albany County earn an average of $31,360. And in Rensselaer, the average is $31,527. In Schenectady, it's $27,757.
A combination of heavy rainfall, ice jams, and melting snow could cause flooding on rivers and streams later this week, the National Weather Service in Albany said Wednesday evening. The warning covers all of eastern New York. Rivers and streams could see fast, significant rises in the vicinity of any ice jams.
The Trump administration moved Thursday to allow states to impose work requirements on their Medicaid programs for the first time. The change will allow states to craft programs that would require Medicaid recipients to prove they are working, training for a job, or volunteering in their communities through exemptions that are expected for the disabled and pregnant women. The change would increase the number of Americans without health insurance. New York is not expected to implement the rules.
Prison populations are dropping in most states, but a new study finds that incarceration rates are falling faster for men. Women are a relatively small percentage of the prison population, but since 1978, their numbers have increased at twice the rate of men. One reason for the difference may be that women in prison tend to receive harsher punishments for rule violations than men do for similar infractions, thus extending their sentences. The report noted that when 3/4 of female inmates have mental health problems and 3/4 of those also have substance abuse disorders, and 2/3 of them have a history of physical or sexual abuse, you're talking about a population that really needs a lot of treatment and a lot of services more than they need punishment. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. In our next segment, WOOC correspondent Willie Terry looks at the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. with an emphasis on the relationship between the civil rights and labor movements.
Good afternoon. This is Labor Talk, and my name is Willie Terry. Today we will host a special segment of Labor Talk on Martin Luther King's views of labor and the labor movement. On Monday, January 15, 2018, will be the birthday of King. There will be celebrations throughout Troy and the world to pay honor to his work and struggles. Now, why is it important that labor and the community recognize him? Well, on April 8, 1968, He was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee while supporting the sanitation worker strike. Martin Luther King was an advocate, supporter of labor and the labor movement, and you will hear it in his own words. So let's get started. Dr. King, why is it important for you to be involved in the struggle for working people?
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
Of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. That we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power. Yes.
Thank you. Very inspirational. Dr. King, I know you supported the 1199 union workers and other labor struggles, but what are your views of the labor movement?
I don't consider myself a stranger. I've been with 1199 so many times in the past that I consider myself a fellow 1199er. There are times that I'm often disenchanted with some segments of the power structure of the labor movement. But in those moments of disenchantment, I began to think of unions like Local 1199. And it gives me renewed courage and vigor to carry on, and the feeling that there are some unions left that will always maintain the radiant and vibrant idealism that brought the labor movement into being. And I would suggest that if all of labor would emulate what you have been doing over the years, our nation would be closer to victory and the fight to eliminate poverty and injustice. I also believe that if all of labor were to follow your example of mobilizing and involving working people in the campaign to end the war in Vietnam, our nation would be much closer to a swift settlement of that immoral, unjust,
an ill-considered war. There are literally two Americas. In a sense, one America is beautiful for situation. That America is flowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of equality. I'm sure that each of us is painfully aware of the fact that that is another America. And forced to live in inadequate, substandard, and often dilapidated housing conditions. And year after year, in this other America, thousands, yea, even millions of young people are forced to attend inadequate, substandard, inferior, qualityless schools. Probably the most critical problem in the other America is the economic problem. By the millions, people in the other America find themselves perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. The problem is not only unemployment, it's under a sub-employment. People who work full-time job for part-time wages. Most of the poor people in our country are working every day. You know where they're working. So often they're working in our hospitals and all over this country. I thank God for what your union has done and what you continue to do. I can remember just a few years ago, right here in this city, that hospital workers made wages so inadequately that it was a shame to say to anybody these people were being paid. And I've been over the country and I know about it. I've been on the picket lines. Hospital workers, whether it's at St. Luke's in Cleveland or somewhere else in Chicago. And I think of the fact that in most instances, in all too many instances, hospital workers are not yet organized. The fact is that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. What I'm simply saying is that we are going to demand what is ours. And my friends, the resources are here in America. The question is whether the will is here. There's something wrong with the policies, the priorities, and the purposes of our nation now. And we've got to say it in no uncertain terms. And I simply say to you that I'm afraid that our government is more concerned about winning an unjust war in Vietnam than about winning the war against poverty right here at home. And I say, if we will stand and work together, we will bring into being that day when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. We will bring into being that day when America will no longer be two nations, but it will be one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. King, for those inspirational words and thoughts. Now, for our audience, there will be a major Martin Luther King program in Troy on Monday, January the 15th at the Troy Boys and Girls Club at 1 p.m. They are located at 1700 7th Avenue. And if you need more information, you could call 518-274-3781. And as we end the program, and as we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King's 89th birthday on Monday, as workers, we must remember to continue the struggle he started. And we must remember what he said about labor in a speech he gave at the Illinois American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organization on October 7, 1965. Quote, "The labor movement was the principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress. Out of its bold struggles, economic and social reform gave birth to unemployment insurance, old age pension, government relief for the destitute, and above all, new wage levels that meant not mere survival, but a tolerable life. The captains of the industry did not lead this transformation. They resisted it until they were overcome. When in the 30s, the wave of union organization crested over the nation, it carried to secure shores not only itself, but the whole society." Unquote. Dr. Martin Luther King, October 7, 1965. And thank you for listening to this special program today on Martin Luther King.
That was WOOC correspondent Willie Terry with a look back at the history of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the labor movement.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. And now for our next segment, we have the Triple E's, Education, Empowerment, and Entrepreneurship, with WOOC's own H. Bosch Jr. He sat down with local speaker, publisher, and author Shari Quinn.
Today's guest, Shari Quinn, author, publisher, and speaker. Thank you so much, Shari, for stopping by the studio. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I always say, let's dig right in and make it do what it do.
All right.
Okay. As an educator, former professor, what inspired you to become an author?
Well, that's an awesome question, and I get asked that pretty much all the time. So I always felt that I would write a book, but as an educator, I thought it would be education-related, and I thought I would write a book for educators to kind of teach them how to better educate our children. Well, then life happened, didn't turn out that way. But then I had a unfortunate circumstance that occurred within my personal life that inspired me to write the book. So it was a matter of betrayal with friendships. And so to evolve from that and grow and learn, I started journaling and documenting some of the events and then turned that into a novel as therapy and made it a fiction novel. And it came amazing.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So tell us about the other books you've written.
All right. So I've written a total of five. So first one was Disloyalty. And after that, I wrote a how-to book. It's a reference book on how to market your book. One of the news anchors locally had contacted me after hearing about the success of the first book. And she had written a book and had about 2,000 books of inventory in her garage and needed help moving them. And so I wrote for her a marketing plan. And because it had turned out so great, I published it as a book.
Wow. So I got to ask this. Of the five books, I understand you've written five books.
Yes.
Of the five books you've written, which is your favorite and most prized?
Yeah. And that's almost like asking a mom, which is her favorite child, right?
Absolutely. And we all think we were the favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they each have something special that I love about the books. So they are my own. So they each are my prize. But I would have to say that the one that I cherish most is the cookbook. And I love to cook and bake. It's a passion of mine. I always spend a lot of time in the kitchen. Probably about 10 years ago, I set the goal to write a cookbook. And it never had occurred just because writing recipes or recreating recipes are so cumbersome and so much detail that I kind of shied away from it. But after I got into publishing and just learning more about the process, I went ahead and developed and published the cookbook. And it's a collection of recipes from my family.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So these are amazing Southern recipes, our family.
Years and years.
Generations. And so what I wanted to do for my family is preserve these recipes. Because just like any other family, we have that one or two family members as
Absolutely.
The cook. But
Absolutely.
All the recipes are in their head. You know, it's not written down. So when they pass, so does the recipe. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to preserve it and have our family history and recipes to pass down to the generations to come. So that is my most prized.
Absolutely. Well, let me stay right there for a minute when it comes to cooking and our family mm-hmm. Recipes. I don't know about your family, but my family, my mother never cooked with a cookbook.
That's right.
You know, it was always like a little piece of this, a little
That's
dash
right.
of that, a little pinch of this.
Absolutely.
You would ask, well, Ma, how did you make that rice pudding? Oh, baby, I don't know. I put a little pinch of this,
That's
a
right.
little dash of that, and this, that, and the other. So it was always, we learned on the fly by just watching.
Yes.
Yeah, because they never had any directions
never.
Or ingredients or measured out anything. My next question is, being that you love to cook, give me some of your signature dishes. If you were inviting someone over to say, I want to impress them, give me a signature
wow,
dish.
Wow, I have so many. So I would have to say then the mac and cheese that I make is amazing.
Ooh,
tastes like grandma's.
Jonah? Oh, my goodness. Make you walk to work and slap your
yes,
boss.
Yes, absolutely. Don't slap your boss, though, but
yeah.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Make you walk to work.
Yeah.
But my mac and cheese is definitely my signature. And mm-hmm. I have two little cousins that are almost like my sisters, and they love my Swiss chicken.
Oh,
it
wow.
is amazing. And so that combined with the mac and cheese.
This is making me hungry just listening to
it. Oh, my gosh.
It.
And my greens, my collard greens. Mm.
Woo.
Woo.
All right.
So
all
I
right.
guess that would yep. be my signature that I just put together as a meal.
We got it. We got it. Okay. So you are also self-published, also a publisher. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So when I first started the journey of writing the very first book, Disloyalty, I met with a few local publishers and national publishers as well. And if you don't have the name or the money to go with a Random House or one of those larger publishers, your investment up front is a lot of money. And I didn't have the capital to do that. And even with the local publishers, it was more than I could afford. In one lump up front before sales. So I took a month off of work and I did research on how to publish. Oh. I have an MBA.
How about
I
that?
Teach classes on how to market and create businesses.
So you basically homeschooled yourself.
I homeschooled myself.
How about that?
So I spent lots of hours on library floors, bookstore floors, camping out with books surrounded by me, jotting notes, taking screenshots. And I really just taught myself the process. And that is how it began as me becoming self-published. And because I have done so well, many people who are aspiring to write started asking me questions about, you know, their dreams and the process. And so I just started publishing other authors.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's great. So tell me, what other projects are you currently working on?
Well, I am working on this amazing project right now. And it is my first as a ghostwriter. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's pretty extensive. And I didn't know in the beginning what I signed up for. I thought it would be simple as doing the interviews, getting the notes, and then just kind of, you know, recreating what they shared. But it's a little bit more extensive than that. So I have now completed all the interviews, and I have done the writing. And I will tell you that it is a memoir mm-hmm. for a local woman in Albany South End. She's an elderly woman who has an amazing story to tell. And she was born in the 40s in Mississippi and has experienced.
Oh, that sounds like it's really interesting.
It is very
That's
interesting.
That's like a page turner.
It's a page turner.
Yeah.
She's experienced so many tragedies and deaths, one beyond the other. And, you know, when she grew up in the 40s in Mississippi, experienced so much.
Jim Crow South.
The Jim Crow South. And, you know, with racial violence and so many attacks. And either her dad was killed. So she shares all of these tragedies that she's experienced. And we connect them together. But it's very inspiring of what she has learned through this process and how it has shaped the amazing woman that she is today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds like I can't wait to read.
Yeah.
That's like, let me curl up or on vacation,
yeah.
a nice cruise, just dig into it.
Yes.
And bam, you know, I missed the whole vacation
because yes.
I just dug right into the book.
And I'm glad you said vacation because that's kind of how we timed the release. So it'll be a summer release so people can take their books on vacation.
Good, good. Smart marketing. So outside of book writing and publishing, you also are involved within the community and host various workshops, specifically your upcoming annual Vision Board Brunch. I like to call you the queen of vision boards.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. That's an awesome title.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the event started 4 years ago in my apartment, and I had relocated back to the Albany, New York area from Atlanta, and I was doing vision boards in Atlanta. And when the new year came, I wanted to grab some wonderful women together who didn't know each other. So I kind of cherry picked a few women because I didn't want the cliques, and I just wanted people to be able to network and grow. And so I introduced the concept to some of them, some already knew, but I introduced the concept of vision boarding. And even in my small apartment, I had a speaker.
How about that?
That's right. And the speaker talked about just, you know, a motivational speech about, you know, the importance of creating your goals and your vision and following your dream. And so we got down on my apartment floor, we're laid out and table and everywhere, and creating these amazing boards. And each of the women then gave a presentation of what their boards meant to them. And we followed up with each other throughout the year. And so because that within the small group, I had about 15 people in my apartment, mm-hmm. I continued that each year. The next year I had it in my apartment again. And then year three, I introduced it and hosted it to the public, which was last year. And it sold out within 9 days.
I mean, this thing is blowing up.
It's blowing
up. The buzz, I mean, the participation.
It's amazing.
I mean, you are a blessing to what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, so why was this important to you?
It was important to me because I believe that my purpose truly is to serve others and empower others. I really believe that. And this is something that I am called to do. And I would imagine that is why it has been so successful, because I don't make it about me. My name is not on it. And I really want to draw the masses, the cost. I only charge people really what my costs are. So I'm not looking to even make revenue, because even if I don't make a dollar, if the change for me is that somebody was inspired, then that is so important, and it motivates me to continue inspiring others. So that's why it's important to me, because it's affecting other people.
Wow. Well, tell us a little bit about the concept of the vision board.
Well, the idea and concept with the vision board is that, you know, you have your large white poster board or any other color that you may grab, and you have your magazines and you're cutting out and pasting. But the vision board is a daily affirmation of the goals and the dreams that you have. And what a vision board is not is a magic wand.
Okay.
So the images or gestures or positive statements that you may put on your board are not going to magically appear. It reminds you when you see it every morning when you wake up, because you're going to post this in your bedroom or your office or wherever you're going to see it every day. It reminds you to work towards these every day. So it keeps the vision right in front of you. And mentally, we are stimulated by visuals. And so when we see what we want every day, it affirms for us to work hard for that. So
truth.
I want to make sure that people understand that we're just not pasting things on the board and hoping for it to come
great.
To pass.
So I want to get a few more juicy questions
okay.
in. Tell us again the details of the Vision Board Brunch, date, location, speakers, and what can attendees expect?
Awesome. So it's this Saturday, January 13th at the Albany Renaissance Hotel in downtown Albany from 10:30 to 2:30 with a hot breakfast brunch. The speakers are dynamite. It's going to open up with the mayor of Albany. So Honorable Kathy Sheehan will be there to welcome the guests to her city. And following that, I have the Honorable Dorsey Appliers. She is the councilwoman of the First Ward in Albany. She right. has an amazing story and well accomplished. And secondly, we have Miss Natalie Carey. She is absolutely amazing as well. And she is the Deputy Chief Commissioner and CFO of the New York State Department of Labor.
Wow.
These two women are dynamite. So mm-hmm. I know that they will really motivate and inspire the attendees.
That sounds like an all-star lineup.
Yeah, it is.
Now, can I ask, Ms. Quinn, those are some great speakers.
Yes.
I know they're going to bring a word of empowerment that's just going to knock it out of the park. But is the vision board just what should I say, is it just for women in terms of women speakers? Because I noticed you didn't have any men on there.
Good question. So
no men.
No
right?
men.
We need to be empowerment and we
yes.
need to give empowerment.
Well, I will tell you, last year there was a male speaker.
Okay.
There was a male speaker. So it is not closed off to just women. And last year there were, I think, about two or three male participants. And this year there is one. Actually, there's going to be two now. So the idea is to really grow the male participation and for women to bring their spouses or, you know, their partners or what have you, so we can get more. And there, because men have dreams and visions as well.
Exactly.
And we need to
and
make
it's so hard for us to get out and talk about our dreams, talk about our goals.
Yeah.
Just like it's so hard for us to go to the doctor.
Sure.
You know, I mean, black men in our relationship to healthcare and doctors, but that means a lot to hear you say that.
Absolutely.
How can people get tickets?
Well, not this year because it is sold out.
That's what I want to hear. It's sold out.
It is sold out with 80 participants.
Great. So tell me, what's next for you? Because you got so many things on your plate, and they're all exciting, and they're all doing things to empower and inspire people. And I love the way you're giving back to your community, but what's next?
Thank you. So once the memoir is completed, this for me will be a year of rest. Last year was my year of adventure, and I traveled really all over the world, going to 4 continents, 9 countries,
bless your heart,
22 life. Cities, and 44 flights. So this
next time you need somebody to pack your bags and just carry them, holla at a brother.
You want to fit in my suitcase?
Yes, right.
But what I want to do, aside from rest, is focus on my publishing business. You know, and really take that off. I have two authors that I have already published. So the woman that I'm working with now will be the third. And then also, you know, doing that collaboratively as the ghostwriter. But I do want to kind of expand the publishing side of my business.
Great. Well, we're just about out of time.
Okay.
And until next time, it's about the triple E's: education, empowerment, entrepreneurship. And remember this, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is H. Bosch Jr.
Thanks again to Ms. Shari Quinn for being a guest on the show. Stay tuned to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine for more education, empowerment, and entrepreneurship segments with H. Bosch Jr.
For those of you who are just tuning in, I'm Megan Marone.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy. To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
Well, tonight, we are lucky enough to be joined in the studio by Avery Stemple. Avery is a psycho-spiritual philosopher-poet from right here in Troy. And Avery has been turning everyday experience, cosmic insight, and philosophic questioning into lyrical portraits and sharing them with whoever will listen. And I'm certainly grateful for that process of sharing. Avery does poetry workshops in elementary schools, middle schools, excuse me, and public libraries. Welcome to the studio, Avery.
Thanks, Megan.
Avery. Can you describe your life as a poet a little bit? When did your life as a poet begin?
I remember writing the first thing that I really got excited about in like fourth grade. My teacher, Mr. Shannon, was a fantastic teacher. But I would say poetry for me really opened up when I hit ninth grade. I had a great teacher, Mr. Speck, and, you know, he just... I can't say that it, like, the floodgates opened at that point, but I remember finding a journal that I had in ninth grade, and it really was filled with poetry. None that I would say was great by any means, but it, you know, was going through life and trying to cope with various situations that really, you know, got me into internalizing and figuring things out through poetry.
And you've carried that love of poetry with you into adulthood.
I have, yeah.
Cool. Can you talk a little bit about some of the poets who have inspired you over the years?
Sure, yeah. I mean, Jacqueline Kirkpatrick, Samson Dykeman, Dan Wilcox, Amani Olugbala, Dee Collin. I mean, I go to a lot of open mics, and, you know, hearing people perform their poetry live is just fantastic, you know, and that really gives me a lot of inspiration. Adam Tedesco is another one. He's absolutely mind-blowing. You know, I really like the Beats. Gregory Corso, Allen Ginsberg, but, you know, Dr. Seuss, fantastic.
Can you talk a little bit about your writing process? How do you begin writing a poem?
Well, I mean, it's about encountering life. You know, when you get into a situation that you really are having trouble coping with or having trouble wrapping your head around, for me, I start writing things down. And, you know, it's usually after I look at whatever it was I've created that go, you know, I get insight into how to deal with the situation that I'm in. So it is a very personal thing, you know, and I would say my poetry really ultimately is for me, you know, and some other people vibe with it. And yeah.
So I was lucky enough to hear your performance at the Troy Poetry Mission at O'Brien's a few months ago. And that was just a pretty spectacular night in general with Dee Collin. And tell me again Shannon's last name. I'm sorry.
She's also fantastic.
Yeah. And so, you know, out of the poets there, there was, I shouldn't say that there wasn't a spiritual bent to anybody's else, but there was a more explicitly spiritual bent to your poetry. So can you describe how your spiritual life and interests overlap with your poetic work? And do you see yourself in tradition with other spiritually focused poets?
I would say it doesn't really overlap. It is intertwined. It's one and the same. You know, I grew up on a sawmill, and, you know, I kind of experienced nature very raw, you know, and you know, I have a lot of poetry about approaching nature and the things around us, our environment. And I think whenever you walk that threshold, you are inherently spiritual. I mean, if you're listening to the birds and you're looking at the trees and, you know, there's mystery and magic all around us. And that's just, you know, I approach that.
And there's also definitely an emphasis on helping others in your work. You seem to want to lend a hand to people. And one of your poems actually instructs people on how to behave, how to smile, and how to forge connections. So can you elaborate on why this aspect of your poetry has emerged?
Sure. Like I said, my poetry ultimately is me trying to cope with my situations. And so when you hear, you know, me saying, oh, you should do something, it's really, I'm talking about myself. You know, you don't go through life without making eye contact, then you're not going to be very successful. If you don't, you know, actually reach out to people, you're not going to get your things done. We are social animals, and we need to form communities to help each other grow.
Can you read us some of your work?
Sure. let's see. This is, what do you choose? We all make choices. You can choose to ride the turbulence, you can choose to float the pond, you can choose to toe the line or choose to step beyond, you can choose to rise above it or wallow in the muck, you can choose to move on down that road or choose to think you're stuck, you can choose to lift your heart up, you can choose to take a stand, you can choose to laugh at midnight, you can choose to understand, you can choose to make a smile, you can choose to dance all night, you can choose to grab a partner's hand and hold on really tight. You can choose any direction. You can choose who you want to be. You can choose to let it go. Now choose responsibly.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Avery, how can we find more of your poetry?
I just started a Reverb Nation. I think I actually started it a year ago and never posted anything. And it sent me like a reminder email that was like, hey, no one's listened to your stuff. And then I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. And so I actually uploaded a few poems. I have several on, you know, Facebook, basically, that I post. I publish a lot of little chat books, and I sell them when I do readings. I don't have much of a digital presence yet, but that's something I've vowed to work towards this year.
And then how about performance? I mean, just given the social and emotional element of your work, it seems like it really lends itself to live performance. Do you have plans to take your work to the streets more?
Well, I mean, I am always performing. People request poems sometimes at different things because they've heard me at various venues. But there's Albany, Troy has such a wide variety of poetry, open mics and features and things. And, you know, the Albany poets, Mary Panza, Tom Job, I mean, they're doing a fantastic job of collaborating all of the various poetry experiences you can get from Saratoga down to Woodstock. So we live in a very fortunate area for poetry.
Do you have any interesting stories of how your audience has reacted to your poems? People who have come back to you and said, this particular moment when you read this or performed this had a certain impact, or I read something in your chapbook and it had a particular impact.
Oh, yeah, sure. I performed a couple times down at Alex Gray's Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, and I did a whole, 10-minute kind of breathing thing where I talked about breathing, and then I had a breathing meditation poem, and I had a lot of people come up to me afterwards and actually ask me for copies of the poem because they wanted to use it either, you know, for themselves or for their kids to as a way to, like, you know, help meditate. Or I have that smile piece that you mentioned before. I like that one. People do respond well to that, and, you know, it just lightens the room. You can see it in the room when people start to smile. It's pretty funny. I like to perform that.
Is that one that you've used with kids? It seems like that would be a natural choice for the work that you do, going into classrooms and spreading lessons on poetry.
Yeah, and I have a couple that are very rhymy, kind of rappy, and I did a program in Schenectady Elementary School, and, you know, the teachers were introducing poetry, and here's this poet, and I get up and do this very rhymy piece, and they were like, oh my God, you just rapped. Did you know you were rapping? I'm like, well, it's a poem. I didn't have any beats. Yeah. And then so I got an email from the teacher saying, you know, like, wow, you really blew their minds. They didn't realize that poetry could be, you know, represented in so many different ways. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool. As a teacher, I used to get free tickets to go see the Dodge Poetry Festival down by in Newark. And I think it was Yusuf Kumunyaka, and he was talking about how the sixth sense comes out in poetry, which is rhythm. So it sounds like you play with rhythm and rhyme to draw a connection between the poem, the person, and the audience, or you as the writer and the audience.
Right. Yeah.
Can you read us another work?
Sure. How much time do we have?
We have a couple minutes left.
So this one's untitled. These are a lot of the pieces that because I chose shorter pieces to share, are kind of just reflections. So this is, listen to the trees whisper, listen to the river sing, listen to the birds call back and forth as they launch in the air and take wing. Listen to the groundhog shuffle, listen to the daisy bloom. There's so much in this life for you to experience if you only make the room.
That was really cool to hear, especially after you talking about nature and your relationship to nature, you know, undeveloped spaces.
All right, I got one last one. So this is Finding the Groove. Do you think that the development of an individual consciousness occurs within a vacuum? Do you think you can grow without inspiring others to evolve? When the glow within you begins to brighten, you make others want to shine. When the music within you begins to pour out, the world around you sings. When the joy within you bubbles out and merry giggles, the rocks themselves laugh. Shine, sing, laugh, dance. Move to the rhythms you feel echoed in your steps. Move to the melodies you hear blown on the wind. Move to the songs that trickle with every creak, and know that we're all dancing along.
Thank you. I think one last thing. Avery, do you have any words of advice for aspiring poets out there?
Right. Yeah. Just if you see something and it inspires you, make sure you get it out, because the more you actually write and experiment with where words go and how they fit together, the more it makes sense.
Do you have a strong consideration of your audience? You said that you write mostly for yourself. So is it a two-part process where you kind of are solipsistic and you go into your own space and just write about the things that you care about? And then there's some sort of editing process where something that you present as performance or publication or gift for the audience emerges.
Right. Sometimes. I mean, it depends. Like the two of the ones that I shared aren't edited at all. It's just that's how it flowed out. And that's, you know, I didn't need any change. Obviously, some I have to like perform. Like when I was doing slam poetry, you have to keep it within a certain, you know, time constraint. And so you had to get it under 3 minutes. So I've, you know, sometimes you have these restrictions that you... I've stopped doing that, though, because I'm like, you know what? I don't want to fit into guidelines.
Well, thank you so much. Can you give our audience a heads up on when you are performing live again?
Oh, geez. I don't know right now. Yeah, soon.
Hopefully the next Troy Poetry Mission. Coming up end of January.
The end of January. Yeah, that's right, on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Troy Kitchen?
Troy Kitchen on Mondays, yep.
Nice.
That's always fantastic. Yeah, if you haven't been to Troy Kitchen, get there. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Anywhere else we can find your poetry before you go?
No, not that I can think of. Find me on the street.
Well, thank you so much, Avery.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I hope you come back. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That was local poet Avery Stemple performing his poetry live on WOOC. Stay tuned to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine for our local poetry segments. We are now joined in the studio by our WOOC youth interns, Lauren Wilson and Trayvon Votrin. Lauren and Trey were also interns in the Sanctuary for Independent Media's summer program, Uptown Summer, in which they engage in the making of an environmental documentary entitled Echoes from Lock One. Lauren is a sophomore at Troy Prep, and Trayvon is in sixth grade at Lansingburg Middle School. Welcome to the studio.
Great to be here.
We're going to begin our discussion with you, Lauren. In the internship, you've been engaging in a reading of the book Asada, which is an autobiography of Asada Shakur. Our youth interns were given the recommendation to read this book by two people, a sanctuary sustainer named Shannon Faulkner, and an extremely talented local poet and artist named Amani. So we're going to have a bit of a dialogue about your reading experience.
So Lauren, could you describe for our listenership, who is Asada Shakur?
Well, she's a former BLA member who had been wrongfully accused of a murder of her friend and a police officer, and which was impossible because she was partially like paralyzed, you could say.
There's all that evidence that her clavicle was broken and it would actually have been impossible for her to have committed the crime. Could you just define for our listenership in case they don't know what the BLA is?
It's the Black Leadership Liberation Association or something
Army,
like that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That was an on-the-spot question. So could you describe, just given what you've read so far, what sense you get of her as a person? Because you've been engaging in this reading of Asada. So what sense do you get of the type of person that she is, what her values are, her personality?
I feel like she values everyone before herself in a way, because like she cares about a much more deeper meaning, even though like she's been going through certain things that she wouldn't expect herself going through. She looks at it as if everyone else can benefit from this, and that, like, as if she's like a model, and like where people can look at this as an example, and where she can just, we can all build. And also know that she's like trying to build from it.
So how does the book begin? In a way, she experiments with non-chronology. Like most of us, if somebody asked us about our lives, there's a certain chronological order. You'd say, I was born here and then I grew up there. But how does she begin the book?
Well, I feel like she begins it by like just describing in her own way. It just like, it's like a flashback in a way. Like it goes back to the part where she's like, everything started where it began. So like, you didn't know, like, so once I read it, I was like, okay, what's going on? Like, who are these people that are bothering them?
Yeah. And, it's a very disorienting opening. You're just thrust into this scene and she's covered in blood, and I don't know, how else would you describe it?
It's like she didn't know what happened in a way. Like, she was, like, in and out. Like, she was going back and forth. So, just, like, we're in a blurry picture, but it's just, like, really, like, graphic in a way. Because, like, it said that it just describes how, like, she couldn't, like, she tasted blood. And then it was, like, it just had us question, like, was she shot? And then that's when it just shows, like, she describes them, like, police officers as pigs because the way they were treating her.
Yeah, and then we find out that the scene that is very disorienting is the scene in which the major crime that she was accused of in her life has gone on, which is the scene where, or the actual event of a police officer and this conflict, which led to her being accused of shooting a police officer. So Angela Davis and a man named Lennox Hines, who is also an activist, a civil rights activist, they provide forewords to the book. And Hines details the way that citizens and especially activists are vulnerable to government control. So if you could just read this quote by Lennox Hines, it's the one that he wrote to her in his foreword, basically thanking her for her life in terms of taking this tragedy and making it into something that could be used in terms of her story and bringing awareness to the truth of power dynamics.
Dear sister, thank you for sending us your vital voice and sharing your passion and commitment. We in this society must remind ourselves how we threaten our own interests and rights when we condone by our silence the government's use of surveillance attacks on legitimacy of political activists and the use of criminal law to suppress and punish political dissent.
So what do you think about his gratitude to her and some of the things that he's worried about?
I feel like she deserves it in a way because it's showing how, it's basically building her up and showing how we still have hope that she gets the justice she deserves and that it shows that, and it's like an example of how if someone else goes through what she's going through, it kind of helps. Well, it helps establish this thing like you're not alone, and it's important for people to see this as like she's a woman doing this, and like she's not like even though she's going through all of this and these people are trying to like take her out of her character, she's still trying to remain sane.
Yeah. So, thank you for your response to that. She also had her own experiences with the radio and radio broadcasts. And while she was incarcerated, there was a broadcast of something that she wrote called To My People. And it was broadcast on July 4th, 1973 on many radio stations. So did you want to read a section of To My People?
Yeah, it's actually, I like the first part of what she said. It says, Black brothers, Black sisters, I want you to know that I love you, and I hope that somewhere in your hearts you have love for me. And I felt like that line was basically saying that although she doesn't know us yet, she's trying to foreshadow a better future like filled with love. Like, for example, like what just happened not too long ago, like how the chaos is going on in our community about like the four people that passed away. Like, some people knew them. I know I did. But it was just like because of what's going on, she wants us all to know that there's love and that we can all overcome this and like try to build a better and a safer communities where we can have like just like a family, but not really much of a family because we're not like close yet. But hopefully we'll get there.
It's interesting that she starts out a really political statement by summoning love and also summoning connection to other people within her community. What else? Are there any other details of the reading that you want to talk about? Just things that she says that you found interesting or to a certain extent, the book is definitely about being a woman, being an African-American woman, and she's Tupac's aunt. That was the first thing you said to me before. So do you have any other details of her life that you want to share with us?
Well, honestly, I feel like that she's, well, being his aunt, they share like so much in common. But just her being a part of something that's so much greater, even though like now, she still played a role in like just building us up and just building people up in general, not just one specific group. And it's like, as we look back on it, I feel like we should all try to, I don't use this as like a bandage and we're trying to like rip it off and like see that as, okay, we have that scar, but we can use that scar as a lesson and then try to like build from it as like a whole and not just like use it and then ignore that we have that scar and probably stumble into more scars or get more scars. So, yeah.
Certainly an imperative for truth, you know, this idea of facing truth head on, would you say?
Yeah. I feel like she wants to expose the truth so that way we know that she's not trying to lie to us. She wants to be honest with the outside, because if you expose the truth, you get emotion. Like, you have people who see this and say, oh, this is really a problem. And then as people are talking about it, it's like, we know exactly what's going on and we know how to fix it now, because we know that they're not holding anything back from us. They're not lying to us like they would do if we were like kids. Oh, you're not supposed to do this because you're this wrong, or because you've seen this, it's not what it seems. It's like you have to see this in order to be able to do something else or grow up. It's not like, it's just like step after step.
That's such a great point. The fact that you have to face these really, really dark truths and not be in a realm of denial in order to move forward with love. So even though she begins to my people with a summoning of love, then she moves into some pretty stark realities. Like she says here, they call us thieves, but we did not rob and murder millions of Indians by ripping off their homeland and then calling ourselves pioneers. They call us bandits, but it is not we who are robbing Africa, Asia, and Latin America of their natural resources and freedom, while the people who live there are sick and starving. So it's a movement from love to then these very harsh realities.
Yeah, I like in that quote, she's just going back on history and about like how you can call someone a thief, but you're not actually citing the problems that you caused, or just how as an individual, if you didn't recognize your flaws before talking about someone else's, it's just a matter of being like humbling yourself, but also just not quick to push the blame.
We see a pretty complicated history too, because she herself got, we'll save this for next week, but you know, she herself got disappointed by trying to join radical organizations and then feeling like there was still a lot of patriarchy that she had to navigate. So she really kind of just tells her story and then leaves it up to us to sort out the meaning of this pretty complex history. Well, we'll be back on next week, and Amani's going to be here to also talk about her own poetry and then also join in on our book discussion. So thank you so much. Any wishes to the audience?
Just get ready for next week so I can like tell you more about it, because I don't want to just like give away most of what's going on. So, yeah.
Oh, there's a call to read to the audience. Thank you. And now in the final moments of our show, we have WOOC youth intern Trayvon Votrin with an update on his newspaper, TV News.
I'm Trayvon Votrin, talking to you about my newspaper, TV News. My new newspaper is coming out January 15, 2018. The newspaper will include local news, events, your weekly forecast, and how you and others can support the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Remember to stop by every Monday at 7:07 to get your weekly TV news. Don't forget to come down to Snuffle Vision Photography Shop.
Oh, wait a minute, let's just announce that after that moment. So if I'm a human listening and I want a copy of TV news, what do I do again?
You can come right down to the Sanctuary for Independent Media every Monday at 7:07. To get a copy.
Pick it up. Okay, and then you have one community event, right?
Yes. Don't forget to come down to Snuffle Vision Photography Shop to watch a free movie for kids located at 111 102nd Street, Troy, New York, 12182.
Well, thank you so much, Trey.
And that concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Guy Schaefer.
And I'm Megan Marone. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page.
As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. Or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m., held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.